Case 94 from the Book of Serenity. Preface to the Assembly. The inferior don't criticize the superior. The mean don't move the noble. Although one has self-control and follows others, one cannot burden the heavy by means of the light. When the four elements are maladjusted, how does one attend and nurture? The main case. Attention. Dongshan was ill. A monk asked, "Osho, you're sick. Is there someone not sick?" Dongshan answered, "Yes, there is." The monk asked, "Does the one who is not sick look after you?" Dongshan replied, "This old monk is able to look after others." The monk asked, "Osho, how about when you look after others?" Dongshan said, "Then the having of sickness is not seen." Appreciatory verse, sloughing off the stinking skin bag, churning a red heap of flesh, before you the nose is straight, right now the skull is dried. The old doctor doesn't see previous ailments, the little one seen, but it's difficult to approach. When the field's water drains, the autumn's wet recedes. When the white clouds dissipate, the old mountain is chilled. Stop and eradicate. Don't deceive and cheat. Using non-accomplishment inexhaustively, he gains the rank. Exalted treetop, you're not in the same class. And the story goes on. Dongshan then said to the monks, "When you leave the skin bag you inhabit, where will you go and see me again?" The monks didn't answer. Dongshan then recited a verse. Students as numerous as sands in the Ganges, but none are awakened. They err by searching for the path in another person's mouth. If you wish to forget form and not leave any traces, wholeheartedly strive to walk in emptiness. And the story goes on, but I'll stop then. Yeah, right. So here we are, stopped in the middle of our stories. And of course, all of us have a story we call the self. And we follow this story religiously. New chapters come out every day. Doing well. I had an exciting day yesterday. Had a terrible day. Looks like things are going to get worse. You know the news bulletins. And they come across the ticker tape and are so enticing. Such great entertainment. The main character is so fascinating. We care so much what happens to him. Will he make it? We don't know. So we are truly the main character. And how wonderful to be in the middle of this great drama, this great feast of delusion. And so Josh was talking yesterday, as we've been talking the whole time, and he did this wonderful retelling of the koan, really embodying how we dream into these koan. At first they appear to be stories about other people in other times, not like us. but we're encouraged to exchange self for other. Instead of looking at the monk outside, we look at the monk inside. And so in Diane's lovely encouragement talk, when she explains how obvious it is how kind the monk is and how sincere, in all my readings of this koan, that had never occurred to me. For me, the monk is always some kind of wise guy who's challenging, giving his teacher grief. These koans are reflections, right? Mirrors of us. We find ourselves and hopefully find our way into something, maybe some aspect we hadn't seen before. And so Josh suggested that perhaps in this verse and later on, Dongshan, in his troubling remarks about to stop grieving, that perhaps he indeed is the old and feeble Roshi. And of course, we all are this old and feeble Roshi, not quite at the height of our powers. But I want to suggest another reading of this verse, this wonderful verse. So I would suggest that perhaps what he meant is students as numerous as sands in the Ganges, but none are awakened. They err by searching for the path in another person's mouth. If you wish to forget form and not leave any traces, wholeheartedly strive to walk into emptiness. In our school, we don't talk a lot about emptiness. I think one of the wonderful things about our Boundless Way school is a kind of emphasis on ordinary life, to appreciate and enact our life not as some great religious drama, not as the struggle between good and evil, but in simply being hot when we're hot, simply being where we are. And we also emphasize, and I think have been wonderfully going into this, using the emotion, using the what is wrong as the entry place. This brokenness, the brokenness, the crack in everything that Leonard Cohen sings of, that this is where the light gets in. And I think this de-emphasizing emptiness and appreciating the fullness, the full range of human life, is one of the innovations of American and Western Zen. And I think we are responding to this tradition that is ever alive, ever changing, changed when it went to China. Chan arose, Taoism, Confucianism blended with the teachings of Buddha and became Chan. And then Chan travels to Korea, travels to Japan and Vietnam, and in each country there is some wisdom, each culture, that is infused and used and illuminated by this great tradition, by this great inspiration of Shakyamuni. And so now coming to the West, to see the wisdom of whole person, to see the danger of exercising one skill so much, we dig a hole and it is so narrow, we may go very deep, but we can't come back. or we come back and have no way to integrate. So I think we rightly don't mention this very much, but today I would like to take up this matter wholeheartedly strive to walk into emptiness. So this wonderful encouragement, let us imagine that Dongshan indeed lived a life devoted to the Dharma, was a person of deep insight, and his words have echoed down the centuries here to us. And he says, talks about students not awakened. They err by searching for the path in another person's mouth. And of course, as we come and sit and listen to Dharma talks and go to meetings, there's a part of all of us that would like to receive whatever the teaching is. Why don't you just tell me? Why do you make me guess? Why aren't you straightforward? Can't you just give me the map that I know you have? So I gave a tip last night. This tip is that there are no maps, and there is nowhere to go to. But the question is, how do we enter into this nowhere to get to? A Hungjer in the chant today said, the boundless field of emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. The boundless field of emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. And this boundless field is not some kind of vacuum. This emptiness, we've said at various times, is perhaps a poor translation. Unlimited potential might be a better description. But there is this world, or we might say this aspect of reality that cannot be described, that is not form. This emptiness and form were continually going back and forth, and we use all of these words provisionally. But to walk into emptiness, he says, wholeheartedly strive to walk into emptiness. So last night I told you to give up, and now Dongshan is saying, no, you must strive. This is a typical Zen talk. You cannot trust Zen teachers. They think they're so smart. And they just say one thing and then say the other thing and nod and smile at you. As if it made sense. But after a while, we begin to realize it does not make sense. It does not make sense. You can try as many years as you want. You can sit forever in the mind trying to make sense, trying to figure out how does it work. There is no knowing. In Paul's lovely Dharma talk yesterday afternoon, some of you might have missed it, but he said that he used to teach walking meditation and say, walking is really controlled falling forward. And then he said, our sitting is like this, only I'm beginning to realize that it's not controlled, and actually, it's not forward. So this falling, this disintegrating, sometimes in Zen we call it shigyo practice, the practice of dying. Melissa spoke of this yesterday. So, of course, there is the arising, the wonderful arising of energy, of form, of things, of stories. But in our stillness, in our boredom, in our frustration, in our joy, there is an entry point that is beyond technique, beyond shikantaza, beyond paying attention to the breath, beyond koan. This formless form. James last night suggested we might rely on this. We might call this the Dharma. And so in our practice, there is the possibility of entering into a stillness. Of course, emotions come up, and of course, we need to deal skillfully in the moment. But there is also the path, or we might say the entry point. Dharma gates are countless. There is the Dharma gate of the Dharmakaya, the vast source world, the Tao, that which cannot be named. And as we work together, as we play, as we live together through these many lifetimes this week, there is a possibility to let things be. Not to go chasing after the next difficulty, and to sit upright, and as Rinzai says, do nothing. Do nothing. There is a great striving in this. Striving not in the sense of some kind of direction from central headquarters upstairs. Now must strive, all engines on strive. Because you cannot work hard enough to find your way in. There is no doorway through that road. There is only the practice of the great heart of entrusting, only the practice of giving ourselves wholeheartedly. This is a passionate activity of allowing all things to be. So we can settle into this silence and this stillness. And in the silence and stillness, please don't imagine that it's something that you don't know. So we hear the word samadhi, and we think, oh my God, what is that? I don't know what samadhi is. Samadhi is often translated as concentration. All of us know our minds and the bubbling up. But I think a better word for samadhi is absorption, where we truly give ourselves to the moment, where we let go of the mind road, or let the thoughts be. So in this stillness, there is actually some activity, not a problem. This is not, and it is impossible to forcefully shut down movement. But we can move toward this opening of the heart, entering this vast Dharmakaya, boundless, we might even say, this boundless aliveness that we temporarily think that we are not a part of. This boundless aliveness is none other than what has been manifesting all along. So this striving is a very particular kind. I said to one of you that if it's not really important to you, if it's fine to just try to get a little calmer, then that's okay. But the power of the story, the power of the ticker tape, the power of the karmic forces in our life are so fierce that unless we do the work that we are all doing, and make no mistake, every one of you is doing this work. We are doing it together. This is an unusual thing for human beings to do. All of us stepping out of our life to step into our life. And we need each other to penetrate, to head toward this heartland that is right here, that is not somewhere else, that is not about something different than already happening. But this is not a mechanical activity of concentration. It is the great longing of the heart for absorption, the great longing of the heart to find our true home before we die. To give ourselves wholeheartedly, with no reservation. Who does not want to live wholeheartedly? So we have an opportunity here, and in the silence, it is an endless resource. And so this emptiness, this stillness, not a fixed position, not, I can do that now, I'm fine, but is a possibility, is underlying, is not different from the world of form. But yet, in the Dharmakaya, we can perhaps feel things settling. And this description of falling, this is not about finding some stable self in a new territory. This is allowing the breath to breathe us. This is allowing the moment to meet us. Hungjur, in his comment, the verse on case 94, he says, using non-accomplishment inexhaustively, he gains the rank. Another translation by Cleary is, with the utmost effortlessness, he sees into the matter. There is a wondrous world that is here, that is our life. All of us taste this. All of us know this in some way. But I would encourage us all to practice with the utmost effortlessness. This is what wholehearted means. Thank you.
Of the verbs, this walking into emptiness struck me in a little different way, and you were just talking about this. Often when I think of emptiness, I'm thinking of Dharmakaya or Shunyata, as you said. But when I heard it in this verse, I heard it as, walking into thusness, and not adding anything. This non-accomplishment part that you were just saying, right? This just... And sometimes this seems like a wonderful idea, right? This walking into thusness, and wouldn't that be cool? I'll just come with whatever is here, however I'm feeling. I'll just bring this and not add anything extra to it. And last night I was in such difficulties, and I just wanted to be anywhere other than where I was in my head. And in those moments, just coming thus doesn't seem like such a good idea.
I'd like the other thus.
I have a very fixed idea of what flavor of thusness I would and it's endlessly difficult, right? I keep bumping into this thing over and over again. I don't like this. I don't. Please show me the thing that's going to turn this all around. And also, easy, and nothing to be done.
Well,
unavoidable.
Right.
I mean, also, there's this sense of, where else could you be other than where you are? And add as many layers as you want, and you're still right here. Each moment is the gate. Don't worry about how many layers you've added, right? Here you are.
Right. So in the how can I turn this around, that's the presentation of the whole matter. Right? And we're... Well said, Steve.
And here's something that's unhelpful about that probably has nothing to do with what you said, but it was just triggered by what you said. There's another way of encountering thusness, as you know so well, and as so many of us know, where it isn't really, the emphasis isn't really on the particular. And I think when Dongshan admonishes his monks at the end of the story that we didn't get to that part, that's in the next episode, I guess, to be continued. When he says, don't make such a big deal about it. One of the things about story making is that we make a big deal about everything. As David said, main character's so fascinating, and what's going to happen, and oh, this is happening, and now that's happening. But in you know, going back to the Dharmakaya, there's another way of translating shunyata as thusness. And what if that's what Dongshan meant? You know, stop putting a lipstick on a pig. Right? Stop the decorating. So that's a very forceful teaching. And I think we don't generally teach that way publicly, but sometimes, as some of you know, in Dokusan we do. We say, cut it out. In a nice way, because we're so nice. Not always. And this is there's so many different ways of articulating the great matter. And sometimes it has to be like this, and sometimes it has to be like that. So stop making such a big deal out of everything. What a teaching.
Lipstick of stories on the pig of reality.
Wow!
Just butt talk.
Dharma master.
Mike.
David, thank you for that ridiculously reckless talk. So many that we do, I feel, here have an emphasis, and I actually appreciate it. I very much appreciate it of allowing our brokenness to be the gate. Something to be felt into in such a way that there's no distinction anymore, and that has been a remarkable path for me, and very healing and necessary. But I also really appreciate that's not the only thing that the Dharma has to offer. That there is also there are moments of stillness and beauty and joy in this practice that offer themselves to us, and I find that sometimes when those moments arise, I say, "Oh, where's that shitty emotion stuff again?" So that I can go, you know, get enlightened. And I walk away from the Pure Land seeking a problem. So this, I think, was a beautiful talk for me, and inspiring, exactly this. And sometimes exactly this is really shitty. And sometimes it's really beautiful and deep and vast and illuminating.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Thank you. Julie?
I just same kind of thing that Mike was just saying, that I've noticed how much I'm so habituated to that constant clatter of the ticker tape going by, that if it stops, I reach out and grab it and get it going.
Yeah, right.
And particularly when you use the phrase walking into emptiness, the way it resonated with me now is that there are moments when, you know, the ticker tape pauses. And I feel it sometimes, like just on waking in the morning or something like that. And actually, I can feel that reaching out to find something, often some problem, some piece of suffering, you know, whatever, something to bring in to fill up that space. And one morning when that was happening, I just heard don't fill it up. Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Don't fill it up. It's quiet in here, isn't it?
And I think it's so important to feel that urge to continue.
Yeah.
You know, and this idea that it is hard to tolerate. My teacher once said that if you want to follow this path of Zen, you have to be willing to tolerate some weird places. And when I first heard that, I thought, oh yeah, they're dark and really, you know. But I think this is one of the weird places that we have to cultivate the capacity to tolerate. You know, can I sit here without reaching for the ticker tape? Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Mike and then Aaron.
Matthew,
sir.
When I was on my way here, I cycled quite a lot of the way from New York in the recycling film for about 17 hours straight. And then I got to this place called New Britain. I think it was the afternoon, probably about 2 or 3. And I had to lie down for a bit. So I lay down, but I had to choose where to lay down cleverly, because I was supposed to be meeting my new auntie, who I had never met, or I'd only met for the first time a couple of weeks before. And I didn't have a phone, so she needed to see me, basically. So I lay down there, roughly where we were essentially going to meet. And then I don't know how long after this, but I was asleep, like flat out, and then I realised that two people were standing above me. So I kind of opened my eyes and they were looking down at me, and I realised that my eyes were bright red, bloodshot. And so they were just in the middle of their afternoon looking down at this person who'd crashed out on their property, maybe. And they started questioning me, who are you? What are you doing? You know, and they were treating me like I was a drug addict who just passed straight out. And I just, this was, by the way, a mother and a son. The son was about 16, 17. And I just lay there, and I didn't have that energy didn't kick in, which was like panic stations. Oh dear, what are these guys thinking about me? Blah, 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 blah. I just lay there, and I just started answering their questions very calmly. And I wasn't, there was nothing in me that was worried. I decided to just carry on still sitting slash lying on the floor, because I didn't want to tower above them or become too offended, since they were obviously a bit freaked out. And this interview went on for about 10 minutes, and I just was telling them about my life. It was really beautiful. And I wasn't adding much or taking much away. It was just all coming out, and then I sort of stopped and I was like, what are you interested in? The boy still looked extremely suspicious of me. And I said, oh, I have a passport. I can show you my passport. Show you that this is my real name. And then one of them asked me something, or I said something like, you do believe me, don't you? And they kind of didn't say anything. I was like, I haven't lied for weeks. And then I realised that was true. And it was just so, the whole thing was just, I think I've been learning about ever since. And it has continued to be really relevant in terms of these talks about, like, the one who is well and the one who's not unwell. Like this feeling of truth just kind of in this moment coming, flowing out.
Yeah, yeah. And I think those times when we don't know to be scared, when we forget the habitual, and there's some possibility of direct contact. So, thank you, Matt. Aaron and then Jim.
So, thank you, David. I had so much fun during your talk. It just really fed into my ideas of emptiness.
Oh boy, I'm sorry.
Just to kind of feel that, you know, and then, you know, to really, you know, have an idea was just kind of, it was interesting, you know, to really have an idea of emptiness. That is somehow different, you know. So just kind of watching that. Just feels important to put that down too.
Yeah.
Get back to serving.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons we don't talk about emptiness, because anything you say about it then is just a burden you guys have to carry around with you now. So I apologize.
So please bring all of your ideas about emptiness to Dokusan so we can disabuse you of them.
No!
Unless you have the right idea, like David does. In which case, bring that to Dokusan and we'll disabuse you.
Jim and then Laura.
I don't think I've ever walked into emptiness. I've been thrown into it a couple of times. 40 years ago, I was married, not to my current wife, some of you know her as reasons. And my wife was pregnant, and she was 8.5 months pregnant. She was like 2 weeks before we were going to have our first baby. You know, it was a very exciting time. We went to the doctors, and the doctor told us the baby had died in utero, and that she had to carry this baby for another 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the moments of our lives, my life, we went out in the car. I remember opening the door handle, it was hot, kind of burned my hand, and she sat the passenger side, and I got behind the wheel, and there was nothing. Mm-hmm. You know? We're supposed to be born, and we're supposed to die. And if we're really lucky, you know, we get to watch our parents die, and then we die, and then our children die. We don't die before we're born, but that's gone. And all the hopes and plans and dreams and the whole world, the whole life, turns itself inside out and swallows itself, and it's empty. And where do you go with that? You go home, and my wife cried herself to sleep. And all I had in the world was the feeling of the sheets against my body in that moment. You know? And there were some things, you know, you walk around for a long time and everything hurts. You know, people don't know what to say because we don't deal with death this way. You know, we have funerals and old people die. Beautiful story. You know, the master teaches a lot of people who dies here. That lovely story. When they hand you the skin bag of your dead son, you're afraid to drop them. Where does that come from? Where does that come from? There is things that come when your heart is ripped, soul. You know, things like karma, things like past and future lives are the only thing you get to hold on to. You know? And they come into your heart and they become part of you. And you don't have to cling to them. They're like the scars on your body. You know, that stay with you. They don't go away. You don't have to hold on to them. And they're the lesson of life. And, you know, if sometimes life just gets very empty.
Yeah. Thank you, Jim. You know that. And so I think we practice because we will, that will happen to all of us, you know, coming up against this. This is not, well, gee, I don't think I'll deal with emptiness this lifetime. I don't think I'll deal with groundlessness. So thank you for sharing that.
And just to say thank you so much for bringing that story in. This is the power of stories. Stories aren't just all bad, right? There are stories that move us, that we resonate with, the kind of pain that you're describing. And there's something very delicate in this. I want to talk about two kinds of emptiness. So the kind of emptiness you're describing, I want to change that to kind of the abyss. You know, the dropping down into so much pain that there's no possibility of response anymore. Emily Dickinson calls it the hour of lead. You know, this just, it's just nothing. There's no way out. And that opening to that hour of lead is a very important part of our practice, because we're so afraid sometimes, until we're pushed in, as you said, we're so afraid that these things will happen, but they happen. And once they happen, we have lots of choices, I'm saying with big air quotes. You know, we could do these things that we've been talking about. We can try to fight them, push them away, turn away, fall in love with them, make this the story of my life. We can do all these things. Or we can come to practice and feel, this is what Josh started with on the first day, years and years ago, when we got together in this room and talked about global warming and racism and all the injuries that are part of being a human being. And part of being on the planet. Even millions of years ago, it was like this, apparently. We don't have any real evidence. Nobody wrote about it. But if they had, they probably would have come up with similar stuff, right? And when we use that kind of hour of lead as a motivation for practice, I have to know. I was very touched last night by Diane's favorite, you know, this monk is really a sincere person, because I had also dismissed him. And then I found one of you came in to Doksan the other day with another koan where the same question gets asked. This must have been a thing that people asked. And I think that's important to know. People were wondering. So life is just awful. Is there a life that isn't awful within the life that's awful? That's another way of saying this question. Is there? You know, I had a teacher once who, when somebody would complain about their life, they would say, "I have a headache." He would say, "Is the one who knows you have a headache, do they have a headache?" Like, what? not a Zen teacher, by the way. So the rooting in the hour of lead, the knowing that that's possible for us human beings, and then questioning, is there anything else? That's where another version of emptiness arrives. And this version of emptiness is shunyata, thusness, fullness, the infinite possibility of everything. And only people who've touched the hour of lead can know that hour of gold that Emily Dickinson also talks about. And then our practice, and we're so devoted to this, and it's really hard to talk about, is bringing the gold and the lead together and seeing that they're exactly the same. They're exactly the same. And the heart breaks when emptiness enters us. Not the yucky, our lead emptiness. That, right? That's the motivation. So there's another possibility. And, you know, and you can have fun with this one too, and please come to Doksan and say, I get it. Never, right? Never. But that moment, like Julie waking up in the morning and the emptiness doesn't allow the regular thing, or Matthew lying down in, they say, New Britain, in New Britain, this is the possibility of freedom. But if it doesn't much matter to you, then you'll just try to be calm. If you've had an experience like this, you know that this is life and death. Life and death matter. And don't settle for that concept of emptiness that's the lead. Yeah. So thank you for prompting me.
Laura?
Thank you so much. So I pick up some threads from various places. I heard another possibility today when you read the koan. Mm-hmm. Interesting how that happens. So that line where Dongshan says, then I don't see the sickness anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't hear it the same way today. What I heard today was, then the sickness is not a problem. You know, that it's not like, oh, I have to now figure out a way to get to this place where I don't see sickness anymore, even if there's really sickness right there.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And thank goodness, because I don't think I'd succeed at that. And I was, what came up for me was my mom. And my mom is unwell. And the sickness can take me over. Her sickness, the seeing her sickness. And, of course, I'm so grateful for the possibility of seeing the sickness as not a problem. And allowing the sickness to be a really big problem.
On that note.